Welcome back to Compounding Happiness, a podcast that takes a genuine and sometimes difficult approach to exploring new ways of thinking, feeling, and acting. Everyone wants to experience more happiness in their life. Let's discover the answers through discussion and curiosity. On this episode, I am joined by Chris Marhefka, CEO and facilitator of Training Camp for the Soul. Chris's background involves starting multiple businesses where he lived a life conditional on achieving in order to receive love. But now in his late 30s, he's leading men in releasing trauma and developing healthy, masculine leaders. We discuss unconscious belief patterns and developmental traumas, challenges that are often overlooked growing up in an upper middle class family, handling the guilt of, I should be happy but I'm not, and losing your identity and personal development. Towards the end of the episode, Chris shares the differences between toxic masculinity and healthy masculinity, as well as ways for people to express vulnerable emotions in a safe manner. Let's jump into it. Chris, welcome to the show, man. I've been looking forward to this, and as I was preparing some questions to ask you, because I don't really prepare too much, I was just getting more and more excited to do some inner work and discuss what you've experienced in life, what I've experienced in life, and just sharing all of that with each other and our audience. So thanks for being on the show, man.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, Jeremy. Appreciate it, man.
Of course, of course. So before we, you know, do a deep dive into inner child work and trauma and toxic masculinity and healing and all of that super deep stuff that I am excited to get into, can you give us just a brief overview? Who are you and what are you currently most excited about in life?
Always love that question. So the who am I today is, you could put as many labels as we want on that, but I refer to myself as a coach, facilitator, leader, mentor, healer, and really the best way to describe it is I've gone down a life journey of many relatable twists and turns and ups and downs. And I find myself continuously growing, but also on the other side of some really big shifts that I find that is useful and helpful for a lot of people as I share. So I speak from a place of sharing my experience. And if that helps people, then awesome. If not, then just leave it.
Yep.
I've been through the very traditional upbringing that I always start with. This is just, I just normal lower middle class family and normal challenges that go with it. And everything about my life up until 32 was do good in school, to get a good high paying job, to then work your life away and then retire at some point at 65 and maybe enjoy life and happiness. And I followed that script for about 32 years. And that led me down a lot of cool paths and projects and a lot of growth, starting a few businesses, selling those. And now I get to support people in walking that journey for themselves and whatever journey that looks like for them.
Right on, man. You mentioned before we started recording that you were just in Colorado doing some retreats. What are those retreats? What do you do on them?
Yeah. So for my company, Training Camp for the Soul, we basically take people in a deep, deep dive into their unconscious beliefs and patterns that people have carried their whole life, really since childhood. The foundation of the work that we do is that most of our development, like who we are and how we see ourselves in the world, is done by the time we're 6-7 years old, when our logical prefrontal cortex starts to develop and come online. And then from that point forward, everything is more repeating the patterns of what we learned, and they play out in different ways in our life. And so what we do is we go past what most people do in personal development, which is like the cognitive thinking mind, the adult mind. And we go past that and deeper into early childhood learning, some developmental traumas, some big T traumas is what we call, or event-based trauma. And we help people get free of it, to be honest. We get free of their past so they can start creating their future. And that's honestly, what I find most people that get out of this program and these retreats is that there's something about their, can you hear that? Sorry, I wanted.
No, you're fine.
Okay, cool.
Yeah,
there's something about their past that's keeping them stuck. And literally these retreats are all about like getting people unstuck in that thing and past it. Yep. And no matter what it is, whether it's their relationships to others, their relationship to their self, their self-esteem, their confidence, their self-love, or maybe it's something to do with money or relationships, or I'm sorry, relationships to their purpose or anything like that. And we help get them through that, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And it's a combination of a lot of different modalities from breath work and somatics and NLP and TRE and all these other modalities that work really well.
One thing that you mentioned when you were talking about yourself was growing up in the lower middle class. And in my opinion, that is one of the most overlooked areas. You know, it's the assumption things aren't super great, but they aren't terrible either. So you don't come from this super poor of, okay, I want to work my ass off and grind so that this never happens. But then you also don't have the luxuries that come with being born to the rich or the upper class that you can get into better schools and better access. So what were some of the challenges you faced growing up in the lower middle class? Because that upbringing, mediocrity is very much, it's praised. Not only is it acceptable, like as you were saying, you know, you get married, you get the 9 to 5, you retire at 65 at your corporate gig after you've worked there for 40 years, then eventually you'll find happiness. It's like, well, yeah, that's a way to live an average life, but based off of just our brief interactions, you aren't someone who's comfortable with average. You don't want that. So what were some of the challenges you faced with that upbringing?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because everyone, no matter what their upbringing, has challenges and they're all unique. But you're right, that it is an often overlooked segment of people. And you know, the way that it played out for me was there was a lot of internal conflict and confusion, to be honest, because it was like things aren't that bad. Like, and that was, you know, at the dinner table, like there's starving yep. children in Africa, eat all your and like yes and. And there's just this feeling of like things are, I have things better. I'm privileged in a lot of ways. I had a loving family and a loving upbringing. But yet I still wasn't truly fulfilled or truly happy. And it was that like internal conflict that created honestly a lot of like internal chaos for me. It was like I like hated that part of myself because I was like, why aren't I happy? Because I'm living better than most people. And then it also honestly played out in how I thought about money as well. Like I always thought that life was going to be a struggle. Like maybe I wasn't surviving from like a roof over my head and food in my belly standpoint, but I was surviving rather than dreaming. I was surviving the day to day to try to get like a little bit more to get the nicer car or whatever. And so it really is like the rat race. It's exactly as it defined. It's this rat race on a treadmill. And there's really no end to it if you keep yourself in that mentality, which is honestly the mentality that my parents were raised in and their parents were raised in. And I come from pretty much immigrants just one or two generations back. And so the story was you just work hard and like life isn't really about enjoyment. Life's about survival. And that sucks.
It does. Like that, I hate when people, you know, life is supposed to be hard. You have to work. It's not always going to be easy. Like, yes, there are things that are going to happen in life that aren't the best, that aren't always rainbows and sunshine and butterflies, but that old proverb that life is a struggle, life is work, life is pain, like that never resonated with me. That never resonated with me.
Yeah. And you know, it clearly doesn't resonate with me now, but I was following that path unconsciously for the first 32 years of my life. And it wasn't until I realized what was playing out that I was able to change it. I like on the surface was happy and I told people I was happy. And from the outside looking in, people would look at my life and be like, you had it all. Like, and I did, I had the wife, the house, the businesses, the money, the community, the things, but I wasn't. And that was the, it almost made it worse.
Yes.
It made it worse because I had all those external things, but internally wasn't feeling it. And then that's when I finally set that story down, that identity down of like, life is suffering and you can't be happy. And it was like an internal choice where I said, I'm going to pursue joy, happiness, fulfillment, love, no matter what. And like, I'd climb to the top of the mountain of material and the answer wasn't up there. So I'm going to try climbing this other mountain.
You mentioned that you found the answer within you, yet you've also mentioned a few times for the first 32 years. So I'm curious, yeah. Was there a defining external moment that happened in your life that caused this paradigm shift in your entire thinking of how the world works?
Definitely. There was a series of moments that I look back and are really pivotal, and they all had like a different part in it. The first one actually happened on my 30th birthday. And I was very much into personal development. I became an entrepreneur in my early 20s and became quite successful in it. And every year I would sit down around my birthday in December. It's great timing for planning for the new year. And I would set these goals. And I would reflect back on my year and I would set these goals for the next year. And when I was sitting down at 30, a big turning point, I mean, like three decades of life, and I'd been setting goals for as long as I could remember. And I was looking back at all my spreadsheets, I keep them on spreadsheets, and I hit them. I kept checking the boxes. I kept checking the goals. And I was thinking about it and I was like, does this mean I'm just going to put another like zero at the end of the goal from last year and just like more money? Like what? I was like, I have all the things. Like, I don't even know what to set a goal for anymore other than just more. And it was like this like question popped up, and it was a really simple question, but it was like, is this it? And it was almost like this moment where I like gave up on that version of life. And I was like, oh, is this it? It was almost like disgusting. I was like, I'm just going to keep setting more goals. And like the achiever in me knows I'm going to hit them.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay. And then what? And so I was like, is this it? And the next, it didn't change there, because the next 2 years, I didn't know what to do differently, but the next 2 years led to a lot of self-sabotage of that life.
Yep.
I started to unconsciously tear down all these things that I had built, because there was now this doubt and this question of like, what the hell am I doing? And this isn't it, but I don't know what else it is. So I'm just started unconsciously burning stuff down, and it led to 2 years of really poor business. I went into really big debt, trying to grow and scale out of purely ego.
Yeah.
And it was like every day, every moment, in fact, I would fluctuate between like doubling down on the old and just being like, no, I got to go back. And then like having those moments of question where I'm like, that's not it. And so like for 2 years, just fluctuating back and forth. And the discomfort grew in me every day during those 2 years. And then I was driving home almost exactly 2 years later. It was right after Thanksgiving. And I was there with my wife at the time. And we crossed the border back into Florida. And I just burst into tears. And it was the thought that came up for me was, I don't want to go home to all this that I'd built, our home, our businesses, our community. And it came out. I was like, I don't want to go home. I just want to go anywhere but here. And really that was just like my breaking point where I just wanted to escape, because it was too much to face. And fortunately, my wife at the time, she had been going through this program that was recommended to us both about 6 months earlier than that by a friend and a mentor. And she did it and I didn't. And she had been seeing so many changes. She was happier. She was lighter. She was starting to enjoy life. And fortunately, she held some really powerful space for me for the first time in a 10-year relationship. And I was just crying on the side of the road and letting it out. And I'm like, I don't know what to do. And I don't know what's next. And like, this isn't it for me. And it was just like this finally this moment of release that had been building up for 32 years. And whew, I can tell you on the other side of that, I felt lighter and I felt freer of that baggage that I'd been carrying. And so there was a massive energetic shift. And so I went home and I decided in that moment, I was like, I'm going to do this program that she's doing. It felt like the right thing intuitively. So I started that about 2 months later. And that's when the things started to change in my life. I started to do things that I always said I wanted to do. I started to take time off for myself, do self-care, and really start like treating me like my priority. And that cascaded a series of enormous changes in my life that led to me hitting the road in an RV for a year, selling my home and two businesses while I was on the road. It was wild, man. People back home thought we were crazy.
Yes.
And to them we were, cause it was so different. But to me, I never felt so alive, and I felt like I was finally living in what we in the woo world called alignment.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Living in alignment and feeling fulfilled and happy. And it was funny because there was so much more unknown in my life then from a material standpoint, but I was just so much more in my knowing of who I was. And so the unknown of the material didn't even matter. I was like, sell it all. I was like, I don't care. I was like, I feel good. I feel amazing. And then that led to finally doing the program that I did. I started facilitating and apprenticing with the founder, and that's the company that I now run and partners with her, and the work that I do now.
There's so much gold in there that we could spend the entire next 6 hours just going through that, because I relate to so much of that. And one area that you touched on was you were involved in the personal development space. You know, you had the goals, I'm sure you were working out consistently and had the, you know, okay, got to be productive, and the mindset and the self-help books and the podcast and like all of that stuff, which is amazing. Yet in my experience, and I'm curious if it was similar to you, the more I ingested all of this self-help, the more I kind of lost my own identity, and I became not Jeremy, but I became part Tony Robbins, part Ed Milet, part Gary Vee, part all of these huge monumental people, which I initially was like, this is amazing because I'm like these people. But what I realized is that was all preventing me and all in an effort to not ever go inward. So I'm curious if that resonates with you and what your experience with that was.
I love that you brought that up, because this is actually like one of my, it used to be like one of the things that I disliked about the industry, but I see its value now. I've really shifted and grown my perspective, is that there is a period of time where that was really valuable for me. And I imagine it was for you, like at first.
Yeah.
And I spent 8 years consuming information rather than actually learning and practicing that information. It was so silly. One of my first mentors, he told me if I read 4 personal development books a year, I'd be in the top 1% of people in the world, in the population. I was like, deal, I did it. And then the next year I did 1 a month, 12. And then the next year I did 1 a week. I read 52 books. And then in the next year I read 100. And I realized, I was like, I haven't actually embodied any of, I haven't applied any of that.
Any of it. Any of it. You take, 0.1% from a book rather than, okay, I'm going to read this book for a year and really embody what it's teaching me. I've done the same thing, man. I've done the exact same thing. I had to throw that in there, because you really don't give yourself the opportunity for application. It's just knowledge. Yeah.
And with those books, there's also the podcasts and the YouTube videos and all this. It was like, it was like an all you can eat buffet of just information. Yep. And I was consuming it. And that's the real question I like people to ask, is like, am I consuming information for entertainment, or am I actually growing and transforming as a result of it? And so I think it's important that people do that, because what it does initially is it expands your perspectives. It gives you new perspectives. You're like, oh, wow, I never saw it that way. And that's like the first step is awareness, really valuable. But you get to this point to where then there's the real work where you have to take that awareness and go inside and dig a layer deeper and get to how this is showing up in your life. Because it's really easy. I mean, especially today with all the information porn that's everywhere, it's literally, you go on the motivation porn on YouTube, you could watch for a lifetime of inspirational videos. And oftentimes it's a distraction and actually a protector from people actually getting to what's really deeply inside. And so valuable step, but if people are listening and you're resonating with this, like, know that there's, now it's time for the next, now it's time to take that and go deeper with it.
Yeah. I don't want to say the word issue, but one of the symptoms that I found with consuming all of this information is there was competing and conflating pieces of information trying to exist in my mind. So now I was having this level of cognitive dissonance where on one hand it was, don't set goals, set intentions. Then on the other, it's, you only need to set goals because if you want to crush it at life, that's what you have to do. So consuming all of this information was almost an identity crisis for me because I was trying to hold 9 different competing viewpoints inside without ever actually going, which one's true for me?
Yeah. And I support a lot of people in this work. And that's exactly what I say to them every time is like, which is the one that calls to you, like, which resonates with you, because they all work. That's the thing.
Yeah.
If you read a book on being more productive and like getting things done, you're going to learn the formula for getting things done, but that may not be what you need.
True.
Yeah, it's like they all work. That's the great thing. It's just that's the next step is getting deeper into, I call it your heart or your center or your soul. And you just ask yourself at a very deep level, like, what do I need to learn right now? Where do I need to grow? And then you go in that direction, because it changes over time as well, for sure. It's you embody one thing and then a new challenge comes up and then you have a new opportunity or edge for growth.
Yeah, let's stay there for a minute, because for myself, when I shifted from this achieve goals, all of this, to more just, okay, let me do the inner work. Let me deal with some of those inner traumas and some of the big ones with a capital T and all of that woo-woo stuff, alignment, like energy, all of that.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Like that was a bumpy and kind of difficult transition for me, because on one hand, I knew it's what I needed to do, but I wasn't sure how, because I had just consumed all of the surface level cognitive information. And then on the other, most of my friends, my peers, my family, they looked at me like I was a lunatic. You know, I left my great paying job. I ended relationship with, you know, I had the hottest girlfriend. I had all the surface level things, and to leave all of that behind to go like, no, I'm going to do some inner child work. On the outside, people went, what the hell? And I'm sure people are still going, dude, what is wrong with you? Like, you had so much, or you could have been doing so, you could be doing so much more. I still get that. And I still battle with that internally. I could be doing more. So all of that to say, what were some of the methods or practices that you implemented into your life to shift from that achiever to more just being, existing?
Yeah. The first and most important, and I say this is a requirement for whatever modality people use, is you have to slow down. You have to slow down. I'd say the breath first. The breath, you slow down the breath, that down regulates your nervous system. And I was explaining this to someone just yesterday, one of my clients is like, if you don't downregulate your nervous system, like any work that you do is not going to stick, because you're just in the survival mode. It's you think about, like, I mean, I described it in simple terms. He's a hunter. So I said, okay, we're actually, we're predator animals. And if you look at all predator animals, they spend the majority of their life in a parasympathetic downregulated state. And then they only turn it on when they have to go hunt. and they have to go and do that. However, most people are living from a cultural perspective as a prey animal. They're like the deer in the woods or the squirrel that's always on high alert because everything's a threat and they're just surviving the moment. But biologically, we're not that. We're designed to be in this slower, down-regulated state. That's where rest and digest and repair and recovery and healing happens. And I truly believe it's the cause for all ailments that we suffer as a society is the fact that we're all too upregulated in our systems. And we're not giving our amazing human technology that we are gifted with, we're not giving it the opportunity to do what it knows how to do. Mm-hmm. And that is, it's a shame because it's free to all of us. we all have these amazing bodies, and no matter how much we beat them down, if we just gave it a chance, it would repair and it would start recovering. It would start healing. And we just don't give it a chance. And so that slowing down process, the breathing slower. And then the beautiful side effect of that is that when you start doing that, you slow down your life, you start making actual space in your life for you to just sit in stillness and think. Some people call it meditate or be mindful. But it also slows the mind down. And it allows you to separate your thoughts from the observer of the thoughts, which is a real big difference. Once that lands, it's like this oh shit moment. I hope I can say that. It's an oh shit moment where you're like, oh, I'm not actually my thoughts. Oh, then what? Oh, then you can start being the director as opposed to just in the movie. You can now start directing the characters and the story, and you can rewrite the script. And so that all requires us to just slow down and take space. And most of us, like myself, who are working 100 hours a week, training 20 hours a week, sleeping like 3, 4, 5 hours a night all for 10 years.
Yeah.
I actually needed 2 full years where I was so gentle on myself. Like I stopped training the way that I was, like, I slowed down. I stopped working. I needed that time to literally make up for a 32 years of just beating myself down. And so everyone has a different level of that, but everyone can benefit just by taking 10 deep breaths and pausing. Mm-hmm. And it also creates some separation between reacting and then choosing your response in life. So something happens. Most of us are just immediately unconsciously reacting to it, just however we were programmed to do. But if you just take a couple of breaths and you slow down, now there's a little bit of space there. And even if you don't choose any differently, you're still consciously choosing as opposed to just unconsciously reacting. And that's when you start to gain control back or direction back over your life, really. Yeah.
This next question is just fully for my benefit because I'm in that phase that you described where you took 2 years off and was just super gentle on yourself. And for the last year, I haven't done any sort of formal work. You know, I do only what I want to every single day, which is like, it was amazing. And it was just, and still is. And I've been struggling, I'd say the last month or so, realizing like, holy shit, is my achiever, is that identity, has that gone away? Is that dead? Because I'm struggling with, maybe I'm just super lazy. Maybe what if I never actually get to where I want to be? What if I stay this quote unquote bum for the rest of my life? What if I become the woo woo person who shows up and is sleeping on friends' couches? And truthfully, man, that terrifies me. That terrifies me to think that, like, that what's next process is really, it's been weighing on me heavily for the last month. And, you know, for someone who experienced very similar things, did you experience those same thoughts or patterns? And then what were some of your methods of growing through that?
Yeah, great question. Because this is, a very predictable stage.
Yeah.
Where in some ways you have to reject the parts of yourself that got you to that point of like me and burnout and crushing myself and just suffering. I had to reject those parts of myself to heal. And the way that I think about it is it's either like a pendulum or really kind of like a spiral, is that when we are swinging to the other extreme, it's just to find the edge of that for us. And eventually the pendulum will swing back if we allow it to. I think it's a natural thing where all we're doing is we're just like feeling out the edges of what works for us, and call it like masculine and feminine. Is that like doing is the masculine and just the being is the feminine, overgeneralization there. But we're, most of us in the US at least, are raised in a highly masculine environment. So I always, almost always, people that do this work, there's a predictable swing to the feminine and the being and the taking it slower. And it's required because it hasn't been experienced yet. It's like that's a part of life that needs to be experienced. Here's the beautiful part, though, that is as you start to swing back and reintegrate those parts of the masculine, the doing, the achieving, you are now doing it from a much different perspective. So it's going to come a choice for you, and it seems like it already is. What happens is it's the same way that you got into this phase, is there was enough discomfort to where you were like, okay, now I need to go somewhere else and different. And then there's going to be a period where there's going to be enough discomfort where you're like, okay, I'm going to start bringing back in some structure. I'm going to bring back in some difficult, like intentional difficulty in my life, and some action. And there's going to be a period where you probably swing a little too far again, maybe 5, 10 years from now, who knows? And yeah, you're going to be like, okay, I need to take a little sabbatical, go back. And it's the acceptance of that that makes it just like, oh, this is just the natural process. But it's the rejection of it that gets people into trouble, of like rejection of this natural ebb and flow. And what I believe is what happens is every evolution, it gets tighter and tighter. We know where the boundaries are. We don't have to swing so far. We just take an afternoon off or we just only work 10 hours a week and we achieve as much as we desire doing that. We just learn how to navigate the life that we desire every single evolution. So it's like, oh, I'm now swinging, definitely in the process of, I've swung back into a more masculine than I was right after that healing period. But I don't work more than 10 structured hours a week. I do stuff that I love. I take care of myself. Like I'm working in my passion. And there's also times where there's weeks where I get caught up and I'm like, shit, I just like, I was sliding back to like old me of like just crushing, not sleeping, get up an hour earlier to get more work in. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. No big deal. Like, I'm just not going to do that. but I also, you get to see the value in both once you experience both. A lot of people haven't experienced that time off. And it's so, so necessary because the lessons that you learn are that I actually don't need to go the way that I've been sold. I can actually, I say this all the time, I produce more results in 1 hour than I used to in 10 hours back then.
Yep.
Just because it's from the right place. It's in alignment. It's from a place of creation. And that space is what gives you access to it. I mean, every great musician, artist, writer, anyone who's doing anything creative always takes time away. Sabbaticals, retreats in the mountains or forest. That's where the creation comes from. And then once the creation is present, it's there. That's when you click it into gear and you act on it. And then there'll be a time where you slide back into nothingness for the creation to come back up. And then it's just like this beautiful dance. It's only because it flies in the face of what we are taught that it feels weird. But if you look at nature, it's just a natural cycle. It's literally every season, every year.
The timing of you saying, you know, every how important it is to take those sabbaticals just made me laugh because right before we hopped on this call, I was reading Deep Work by Cal Newport, talking about exactly that, how important it is to set aside some structured time to intentionally just be in that creative process and then come back to actually execute on that. But that time away to just be in that creativity is so important. And I feel like I've spent the last year in that creative stage of kind of ramping up and like, okay, something, I'm going to start doing some really awesome things and I'm not sure what, but I can just tangibly feel it. It's like, okay, I'm excited for this. And I think my resistance to, there's resistance there. And I think that that resistance is what's preventing me from enjoying this moment.
You know what the analogy that just came to me is like, it's like being an experienced surfer. The beginner tries to paddle hard and catch every wave, but the experienced surfer, they wait and they feel when it's coming. They're like, okay, the set's coming, the tide's perfect. Like, and then out in the distance, they start to like see it building and they see it like half a mile away. And then like they're perfectly set up in the right position. And then they catch the best wave of their life and they ride it all the way to shore. And everyone else is like, oh, how did they do that? And they were just too busy working so hard, paddling, tiring themselves out that they couldn't do the same thing. And that's the experience of sitting and waiting for the right wave for you. And then being, again, having the capacity to catch it when it's there. And the capacity is really important because if you're go, 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 you're wearing down your capacity with every other thing that you do. Mm-hmm. And so like when I get that inspiration, it's like, boom, like all in, putting all the effort, energy into this thing, whether that's a relationship or a child or a business venture or anything else that you're doing in the world, is like giving your inspired energy to something will catapult it 100x what just this average monotonous energy will do. And so that's really what that how I feel it is. Like sometimes you're just sitting on the board wondering, like, is there ever going to be a wave?
Yeah.
And should I just catch this little tiny one? Should I just, oh, and that urge is there because it's like, but internal deep down, you know, you're like, no, that's not the one for me. And it takes that patience to sit and wait and breathe and relax your body so that you're fully ready to go all in when that shows up.
That's a beautiful analogy, man. And as you were just saying at the end there, to the observer, you're just sitting there waiting, like, what is he doing? But for the surfer, they're there, they're probably visualizing, they're focusing on their breath, they're intentionally resting, they're observing, they're doing all of these inner, that they have all of these inner systems working that to the external eye just looks like sitting, like nothing's going on, when in reality it's, I'm gonna let the ocean, you know, the ocean will work for me rather than me trying to fight this massive immovable force. I think that's a beautiful transition point. One thing that I've noticed, and I'm sure you've noticed, and is just kind of being collectively felt throughout the world right now, is this shift might not be the right word, but this misunderstanding of the masculine energy. Everything is being labeled as toxic masculinity, and that meaning, that need for a true strong masculine presence seems to just be like being pushed to the wayside. So I'm curious for you, what is the difference, or curious your perspective on what's the difference between toxic masculinity and a healthy masculine energy?
The simplest definition in my mind is this harming another or myself or the environment? Is this harming something, or is it helping something? That's it. That is literally it. And the problem is that there's a lot of models out there for harm. I mean, I don't like to speak from like the soapbox, like I know any better because I live this as well, but like we've done a lot of damage to each other and the world and the environment and the planet. Like we've done a lot of damage, we have. And I think it's just like a collective shift where we're starting to realize that. And we're blaming the energy of that, which is toxic. It's harmful masculine energy. It's just like pillage the resources for our own personal gain. And collectively, I do see a shift. I mean, definitely in the world that I'm in, but also just across the board, I see a shift. And I see the next challenge, though, is that all masculinity is getting lumped into that category, which I think is happening right now. And yep. it's funny. It's funny and silly to me, but also it's obvious and predictable. Is like if you're hurt by, like, if you get like attacked by a dog, you now have a fear of all dogs. And so it's like a very obvious and predictable thing that's happening. But the truth is that the naturally occurring masculine energy is A, in all of us, and B, it's a natural state of being. And so we can't eliminate it. And in fact, the cultural elimination of it is going to cause more harm than good, because you know what? Also, the masculine energy is a very powerful, strong leader who supports and holds a community or a family or a business in a safe way. They're the ones that are out front leading the charge towards good as well as towards evil. And so it's the same energy. It's just what it's directed as. So suppression of it is not the answer, because it's still there. And what happens when we suppress and we compact something that's pressurized? It explodes. And that's what we're seeing happening, is that we're just telling it all to go away, but it's still there. And we keep pressing it down. And I see it a lot. I do a lot of work with men, and the development of men is all around, don't do this, can't do that, don't do that, do that. And it's just this packing down of all this powerful energy. And then it comes out in really unhealthy ways, because they don't know how to express it and deal with it. And so what I'm passionate about is like giving people the safe space to access all that energy and power that's moving through them, so they truly know what they're responsible and capable of. And then guiding them to their heart so that they can direct all that power in a good way for themselves, for others, for the environment. Because I mean, you know, we all have power, and I believe we're all doing our best with what we have. Unfortunately, some people have conditioning that lead them to do some really awful, harmful, and evil things. And even the most evil of people have a heart somewhere. It's just blocked by a lot of probably really horrible things that were done to that person that caused them to do the things that they're doing. I mean, they prove this is just about every physical abuser was abused. Every sexual abuser was sexually abused. It's like, and it's not to bypass the actions that are happening, but it's in more of an understanding that we're all capable of evil and we're all capable of good. Those are all parts of all of us. And it's about healing the things that are causing people to do these, to put this powerful energy in the wrong direction, healing those things so that they can move that powerful energy to a more helpful direction. Yeah. And that's the work that I do. That's what I'm passionate about. Because it's like, like continuing down this path of like suppressing like half of all of the world's energy and all of our individual, it's not going to work. Oh. It's just going to keep exploding. And so I'm more about like teaching people healthy ways to relate to it.
Yeah. Do you mind sharing some of those ways that you teach specifically young men? Because I've, in my experiences, when I would have emotions or let those emotions out, it was then layered with guilt and shame and judgment and all of these super negative connotations with something that isn't actually a negative experience, but that programming and wiring that happened in my brain equated emotions are bad, emotions mm-hmm. are weakness, emotions, vulnerability is the worst thing there is, you know, all of these yep, beliefs that. that we've all, not that we've all, but yeah, most men mm-hmm. have implanted in their brain. So for men in specific, just because you do a lot of work with young men, what are some of the ways to start opening up to those emotions in a healthy, controlled, non-explosive way?
Yeah. And I will say that this does apply to both male and female identifying. It's just, there's almost like a different challenge that they face, but we all face the same emotions. And so the emotional release and the healthy way to deal with it is going to be the same. It's just usually what brings it up is different depending on what your sexual orientation, biological sex is.
Interesting.
Yeah. It really is like we all have like the same spectrum of emotions, and we all have a sheet of paper with a line down the middle, and these are the good emotions and these are the bad emotions. We were all raised that way, or most of us, like we said. And most of the ones in the bad are the guilt, the shame, the grief, the anger, the frustration, the sadness. And we all want more of the good and we want less of the bad. The problem is the bad's still there, aka the bad in quotations. Those emotions exist in all of us. And one of the most like freeing things was this quote by Joseph Campbell, is that any emotion felt all the way through is bliss. Any emotion. Hmm. And it's only our judgment of them that makes them wrong. It's only our judgment of the emotion that makes them wrong. And we can go even deeper, because what we're judging is literally just a sensation in our body. That's literally what we're judging.
Which, when broken down that in those simplistic manners, I mean, I get so caught up in the weeds sometimes, like, oh, it really is. I'm judging myself for this pressure I feel in my chest or tightness in my stomach or whatever feeling, without just going, wait, no, everything is neutral. I get to assign the meaning to it.
Yep. Exactly. And it's like this, it feels so silly. But when you realize that every decision we're making is to avoid feeling a sensation in our body. And when we can like grasp the magnitude of that and learn how to feel safe just feeling the sensations objectively and without trying to fix or change or reject them, they just move through us. They do studies on this, is about 90 seconds of allowing any emotion moves through us in the moment. It's like if you watch a child, they have a tantrum and they broke their toy and they have a tantrum and they cry through it and they scream through it. And then 2 minutes later, they're ready to play again. They find another toy. They found another. It's like, that's literally who we are. Our emotional body is our inner child. And that's literally what we're doing all the time. But when we reject it, it lingers. When we suppress it, it lingers. When we don't pay attention to it, it lingers. And it's always this like, it's like this chronic, like hanging around energy that carries into the next day and the next week and the next year. And it just becomes our identity. It's because it just hasn't been addressed and dealt with. And so when we actually make the time and space in our life, when we have a safe container, and it usually requires some level of support to like hold you while you really go deep in your emotions. Because for most people, that's a scary place to be, especially the ones that they're not comfortable feeling. Yeah. And so having someone guide you and hold you while they tell you it's safe and okay to go into these things. And then you finally experience what that really true release is. You realize that Joseph Campbell quote is absolutely true. It's like, oh, I feel incredible. Like I cried my eyes out. Like I went deep into this sadness and this grief. It's like, I feel amazing.
You know what I think is really fascinating about what you just said is needing that support for someone to just hold space for you and nurture you and love you, almost as if you need the feminine energy to release some of that masculine energy. You know, if you don't have that, if you had someone who's just going, dude, just feel like, try to logic your way through these feelings, just achieve it, get it done. You 90 seconds, man, get through this emotion. Yeah, go, you know, beating your chest. That's not nearly as valuable as someone just going, hey, it's okay. It's okay.
Yeah.
Just feel through it. It's okay. And that was just an interesting connection that I formed of, in order to truly work through the masculine, you need the feminine presence to be there with you too.
For sure. It's this unconditional love and acceptance of like, hey, whatever it is. Yeah. Welcome. Welcome here. Go for it. And it's like that masculine go, go, go. It can be useful for sometimes to like break someone out of pattern, but you're absolutely right. Is like the softness of allowing someone to do it on their own is much more lasting. It's much more gentle. It's much more lasting. And it's something most people haven't experienced, is that like complete acceptance to just like whatever's there, like let it go, let it be, let it flow through you. It's freeing in a lot of ways.
Super freeing. Chris, I've really enjoyed our time together. I have a couple more questions for you before the top of the hour. And then I want to ask you I'll just ask you now, where can we go to connect with you further? Where can we get in contact with you?
On Instagram at Chris Marhefka, my name, and then also my company at Training Camp for the Soul. And then they can also check out trainingcampforthesoul.com for all the online programs and in-person retreats that I run.
Cool. I'll put those in the show notes so we can get plugged in with you super easily. All right, two last questions. What is something that you previously believed to be true, either about yourself or about reality or about this personal development space, that you no longer believe to be true, that you've done almost a 180 on?
The mind being the director is now for me, the heart is the director. Yeah. So the mind is just a servant. It's a really good servant. You just don't let it take over the show, which, yeah, that was the big 180 for me.
I resonate so deeply with that. So deeply. All right. Final question. Name of the podcast, obviously, Compounding Happiness. So Chris, what do you do every single day to intentionally add happiness and value to your life?
Well, I just did it right there in that moment. I breathe.
I was about to say that. I was like, no, like regardless of what answer you say, that's the bullshit one. The true one is you breathe.
Yeah. I breathe. And when I open my eyes from just one breath, I just have gratitude for like the life that I have. I see beauty in everything around me. But when I'm just like head down, like not breathing like 100 miles an hour, I don't see like all the amazing stuff that's in life. So I slow down, I breathe, and it's like taking a slow stroll in the park versus speeding 100 miles an hour down the freeway. You just breathe and then do it again. Yeah. Do it again, even deeper. Yeah.
What's so cool about just intentionally taking that breath is it's so rare to see people do that, that if you see someone actually do that, just by nature, you kind of match their breathing pattern. So, you know, you were doing that and I found myself without even thinking, I was taking a deep breath too. So you doing that also gives other people permission to do the exact same thing. And what a beautiful world it can be and will be by just pausing every now and then.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Chris, thank you for spending an hour with us and sharing your lessons and experiences that you've, or that your experiences you've experienced. Talk about good syntax and grammar right there. Clearly it's been a long morning for me. But anyway, man, this has been a ton of fun. I loved meeting you. I'm sure we'll be in contact. And for those of you listening, if you resonated with what I talked about and what Chris talked about, please go get connected with him and share this episode, like, comment, subscribe, all those things. It helps so much. So until next time, everyone, peace.